This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. A report published earlier this month in the Journal of the American Medical Association starts with some hard numbers about gun violence. Since the beginning of the 21st century, an estimated 800,000 people have died firearm-related deaths, and 2 million injuries have come about in incidents involving guns in the United States. So it comes as no surprise that firearm violence is a huge public health concern. In the St. Louis area, casualties and deaths related to guns have decreased over the last 2 years. But research shows that residents still worry most about gun violence when it comes to health and safety. That includes students in some St. Louis public schools who staged walkouts earlier this year to call for more secure gun regulations. Dr. Sandro Galea is dean of the Margaret C. Ryan School of Public Health at WashU and editor-in-chief of the JAMA Health Forum. He joins us now to talk about a research-based plan co-authored by 41 medical professionals to make St. Louis and other parts of the U.S. safer from gun-related violence by the year 2040. Dr. Galea, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Galea, I'd like to start this conversation with a little bit of context on public health. How do you define that term, and what does public health look like in the day-to-day?
Public health is about making sure that we can all live longer, healthier lives. And in the day-to-day, in an ideal world, we don't even notice public health. So public health means that you and I can go on our life, breathe safe air, drink safe water, eat safe food, live in neighborhoods where we're not afraid of being injured by gun violence, which is the topic we're talking about today, where our cars are safe, where we have places to exercise, where we have the conditions of living that ultimately generate health. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to realize that public health is a complement to medicine. If we are sick, we want medicine to cure us, to make us better. Public health's job is to keep us healthy to begin with.
Have you found that people's understanding of public health has improved over time, or do you still face a lot of questions about what it does mean in people's experience of things that don't involve, things like the pandemic, for instance? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suppose the answer to your question is yes, meaning yes, I have found people understand a bit better, but yes, we still need to do a lot of explaining. I think there is a perception that public health is focused only on things like the pandemic, and certainly one of public health's roles is to make sure that there are no infectious diseases that harm our health. But that's only one of the roles of public health. Issues like firearm violence, issues like safe neighborhoods, issues like mental health, these are all part of the remit of public health, and our job is to create a world where we have solutions to as many health problems as possible so that we are as healthy as possible for as long as possible so that we do not need cures and medicine.
Mm-hmm. Now, this March, the Journal of American Medical, of the American Medical Association, commonly known as JAMA, held a summit that brought together 60 thought leaders from many different disciplines to discuss firearm violence. What made having people from such a diverse range of experience and expertise important in discussing gun violence?
You know, as you said in your introduction, gun violence is a real challenge in this country. We've had about 800,000 people have died from firearms in this century alone. People don't quite appreciate the scope of the problem. There are about 400 million firearms in civilian circulation right now, and about more than half of all suicide deaths involve firearms. So this is really a big issue for us. And in the public conversation, it is hard to engage around firearms because the issue is so politicized, and I think it provokes different perspectives depending on where people's ideological bent is. The point to bringing together these experts is to say, this has nothing to do with politics. This has nothing to do with ideology. It doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat, or independent. All we're trying to do is to say, this is a real health issue. What are potential solutions? that we can all get behind. So the reason there were so many people is because we had people from all sides of the political spectrum, from different perspectives, academic perspectives, as well as involved in manufacture and regulation of guns, to say what could be approaches that we could adopt as a country to create a world that is safer from firearm harms over the next 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that struck you, that stood out from that experience of being together with so many people? And in particular, was there anything that manufacturers brought to the table that seemed to resonate with all of those who were in attendance there at the summit?
Well, when you get together with these many people who care about this issue, who are involved in this issue, what really strikes you is that the noise of the public conversation falls away pretty quickly. You have people in a room who are committed to trying to find a way to keep Americans safer, keep Americans safer from gun violence. And what really emerges is there are a lot of things we can do. I think sometimes in the public conversation, there is almost this impression of this issue is so difficult, there's nothing we can do about it. But that's not correct. There's actually quite a bit we can do about it. We know, for example, that having licenses for firearm purchase will reduce homicides and suicide. We know that safe storage of firearms will reduce likelihood of death by suicide. We know that restraining orders for people who have been convicted of domestic violence, including firearm removal, will reduce risk of homicide by firearms. We know that different types of safer guns that are indexed for only one particular user can reduce violence. We know that things like extreme risk protection orders, commonly called red flag laws, can reduce risk of firearm, of death by suicide from firearm. So we actually have quite a bit of literature on this, quite a bit of science on this. And a science-based approach, which is, of course, what an academic journal like JAMA is about, can really make a dent in firearm harms, both in terms of death and in terms of injury. And our job as an academic community is to help provide these options, to help provide for society a bit of a roadmap that says, these are the things that we can adopt as a society. None of this is challenging the Second Amendment. None of this is challenging that people feel strongly about guns as part of the culture. All it's doing is saying, let us create a world where we and our children are safer, where we and our children are safer from harms from firearms. And what you learn by being in a room like this with this many people is that we all care about this. These are shared aspirations that we all have and we all want to have as a country.
Mm-hmm. Now, the report that pertains to the plan that we have alluded to, the plan itself is meant to provide, as you said, for a country where firearm violence is substantially reduced. What concrete elements are part of this plan that came directly from the summit back in March?
Well, what the summit tried to do is to propose five steps that we can adopt to achieve a safer world in 2040. And we use 2040 as a bit in the future, but not too far in the future. And the five steps were as follows. Number one, were to make sure that we focus on communities and change the underlying structures within which firearms happen. And that means that communities are partner and collaborators with police and with other efforts that are designed for prevention. Number two is to use technology and regulation responsibly. So for example, innovations like multi-biometric, personally authorized firearms, passive firearm detection systems, using things like AI for upstream prevention, approaches to strengthen safety in the homes and safe storage. Number three is to change how we talk about the preventability of firearm harms. And this goes back to a little bit of what I was saying, which is moving away from thinking there's nothing we can do about this, this is such a difficult problem, to actually recognizing there are many things we can do. There are things we can do about reducing availability for people who are going to potentially harm themselves or harm others, reducing firearm carrying in public spaces, making sure that we are careful about firearms in the workplace. Number four is to coordinate government action across the board. Because, for example, we know that alcohol sales are linked to risks of firearm violence. We know that cleaning up urban spaces, improving street lighting, stabilizing vacant homes reduce risk of firearm violence. So these are all elements that require a whole of society approach to result in reduction in firearm harms. And number five is that we need more research on preventing firearm violence and firearm harms. We as a country have had long lulls, really 25 years at a time, when we have not investigated potential solutions, which is at odds with how big a problem is. You know, I think some of your listeners may not quite appreciate that more people die from firearms than die from motor vehicle injuries in this country a year. And we spend a lot more money on research around motor vehicles than we do around firearms. Mm-hmm. So we need the research to be able to inform gatherings like this, to be able to inform solutions that can help us move forward.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kalia, what do you foresee as the biggest challenges to seeing this plan achieve what it is set out to do, you know, within, as you said, a reasonably like close time, but also, you know, like 15 years down the line?
I think the biggest challenge is a perception in the public sphere that this is an intractable problem, a perception that we can never agree because the issue is so politicized that there's nothing we can do. I think if we break through that perception, if we realize that actually there's a long list of things we can do, which I've summarized some of which on this call, I think it paves the way for us to start implementing some of those things. And the implementation does not have to be only federal, because sometimes it's very hard to get things done at the federal level. We can do things at the city level. We can do things at the state level where we, in fact, model what can happen across other cities, across other states. So what I would like us to do is to be open to the conversation, to say we can have a conversation where we respect that we may feel differently about the presence of guns, we may feel differently about the Second Amendment. None of this is about changing that. This is simply saying, can we implement practical solutions that keep us safer?
Mm-hmm. And on the other side then, Doctor, what do you think could be one of the greatest assets to seeing this plan come to fruition?
I think this is a little bit what you started this conversation with, that in places like St. Louis and in places all over the country, there is a growing recognition in communities, among people, that this is a real challenge to the health of the public. And it is a public health problem insofar as it affects tens of thousands of people. And I think when you start having a growing awareness of the depth of this challenge, we start having growing awareness that good people are willing to embrace solutions, I think it opens up a pathway. It opens up a way forward, and it opens up for us opportunities to engage and to engage with those who are in a position of decision-making authority to implement programs and plans. Mm-hmm. And this report, in some respects, was trying to do this, trying to say, in 2025, can we put out a report that summarizes the best science and that says, we can do this. This is what we can do. This is what we can do as a country, and this will make a difference.
Has there been some challenge with the science part, you know, in recent years? To some, it may seem like much of what you're talking about is, you know, common sense. So what are the obstacles? Is it a politicization that people are seeing, you know, play out in social media, for example, yeah, or, you know, in mainstream media too?
Yeah, so we as a country did not fund science around firearm harms for about a 25-year period. There had been in the early 90s, something called the Dickey Amendment, named after Congressman Jay Dickey, who has since passed, that prohibited federal funds from going to the CDC to be used for firearm violence research. And that was interpreted broadly as a prohibition on all federal funds being used to fund firearm research, even though it was never intended as such. That was then reversed about 10 years ago. And then firearm research started ticking up again, but in the past few years, being caught in a fairly politicized time, as we all know, there has been a slowdown again on firearm research. The challenge to how we operate as a society is, unless we can have research to document what is happening, to document potential solutions, decision makers, politicians, mayors, governors, presidents, do not have the data to inform how they can act, which of course then results in no action. So the science is the foundational step to everything we do as a society. And when you stop research on a particular area, you end up de facto stopping action. And this field has suffered from that, in that we were stopped, then we started again, and now we are roughly stopped again. And this keeps holding us back from solutions, keeps holding us back from putting in place things that could make a difference.
Mm-hmm. You are the dean, Dr. Galea, of the first new school to open at Washington University in 100 years. And you're the person who has launched this school. And it seems to me that it is not an accident that this new school is public health. Why is public health education so important in St. Louis, especially given what we've discussed today about health, about gun violence, and maybe about some of the resignation people have had around getting their arms around this problem of gun violence in St. Louis?
Well, I think you almost answered the question in your own question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WashU decided to take this step to create this new school, the School of Public Health, and the decision was made a few years ago. And I think it came from a place of a recognition of the importance of public health for everything we do as a society. Because when you take a step back and you ask, what are the values that we share? What are the values you and I share? What are the values that you and I likely share with all the listeners? Well, there are many things we may disagree on, but we all agree that we want to be healthy. We all agree we'd like to be healthy for as long as possible. We all agree that we would like our children to be healthy for as long as possible. And that is the role of public health. What public health does is it creates the conditions for us all to live long, healthier lives.
Mm-hmm.
So WashU has been on a journey towards public health for about 20 years. There have been a number of faculty who have been doing excellent scholarship and science around public health. But having a school allows us to bring those faculty together, to bring students interested in the area, and to be a partner to other programs and schools, public health in the area, to health departments, both at the city, at the state level, to community organizations, to provide the science, provide the partnership, provide what our faculty know and the expertise that goes with that towards building a healthier St. Louis, healthier Missouri, healthier Heartland. And that's really our mission. Our mission is to have outstanding science and scholarship to train students for the next generation, to do that in partnership with a real commitment to having an impact for better health locally, first and foremost, and also globally.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Sandro Galea is the dean of the Margaret C. Ryan School of Public Health at WashU and editor-in-chief of the JAMA Health Forum. Dr. Galea, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Darius Varner.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.